Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 98 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling Ag Burning, a program that works. About my conversation with Carrie Peterson, Supervisor for Agriculture and Outdoor Burning in the Eastern Region of Washington State's Department of Ecology. Peterson was hired in December 2001 to help implement and run a new burn program, a compromise between clean air advocates, wheat growers, and ecology. The foundation of the program lies in metering the amount of smoke farmers can put into the air, while maintaining the agency's number one priority of protecting public health. I was a reporter in the midst of the Great Burning Debate, circa 1996-2000. From a reporter's point of view, looking back, I think the Washington Association of Wheat Growers and the activist group Save Our Summers fought each other to a draw. The final agreement was a compromise, but there was a lot of ill will at the end. Everybody was angry. When I think back to the energy that surrounded the topic of wheat stubble burning for years on end, not to mention the financial outlays, yikes! But that was then, this is now. Ag burning continues in eastern Washington with close to nary a complaint about it. I met with Peterson on October 22, 2018 at his office on Spokane's north side. Not all agriculture commodities have reduced burning, as you'll hear ahead, but wheat stubble burning is down for the last couple of years running. I asked Peterson to explain what's causing the decline.
Wildfires are in there. There's also new technology, you know, farmers buy new equipment. That helps out. And then also we got a lot more farmers baling now than we did before.
How have recent summer fires impacted the burning program? I have an air quality app on my phone, and I used it a lot during last summer's fire season, but I don't think it was for field burning.
Yeah, no. The amount of wildfire smoke has decreased the amount of ag burning. You got to remember that we're the air quality guys, so as it starts getting smoky, we start cutting back on our burning. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, we're pretty restrictive. We still try to get, well, we work to try to get 90% of our permitted acres and tons burnt in the year or during the season. We thought that was a pretty good goal, and meeting with conservation districts at like farmer, when the farmers get together and say, hey, you know, this is what we would like to do, you know, complete 90%. What do you think? Hey, farmers, you know, they would like 100%, but, you know, it is what it is. But the wildfire smoke has been probably the biggest deterrent or the biggest factor that has reduced our burning.
You mentioned baling. Certainly, it appears to me as I'm driving in the country in the fall that I'm seeing a lot of straw bales. I assume that's all going to the cellulose plant in Starbucks.
You know, a lot of it's going there, and so we're really excited about that. You know, a lot of it's still used for mushrooms and other products. The biggest thing is the pulp there in Starbucks and the amount of bales. It's going to be tough to show you a picture here, but it's amazing how many bales have been stocked up there. We're hoping that the factory or the plant opens sometime January, February. Actually, if it does, then our June task force meeting will be held down there at Starbucks, and we want to get a nice tour of the plant.
Of course, we look at that cellulose plant and we think, well, it's a good thing because they're using a renewable resource in terms of the wheat straw. But that comes with a double-edged sword, doesn't it? I mean, taking the straw off of the land, doesn't that have influences on erosion? And, of course, that straw, it's not empty calories. I mean, there's nutrients in that straw. So I'm curious, you're in the burning program, but does ecology have an opinion at all about taking that straw off the land?
That's interesting that you'd bring that question up, because some of the latest research we had done by WSU's with Dr. Thompson, it's actually completed and on our website. And there is, you know, there's a nutritional value to the soil and everything that's left on as it decomposes. And his study actually says we should leave some residue on our land to decompose and continue to revitalize our soil. When they do research, they're not for or against, but he did say that burning can take some of those nutrients away. Also, baling can take some of those nutrients away. So, you know, a farmer has to decide. Sometimes, you know, farmers don't just burn for residue. They do a lot, but not just for that. There's the weed factor and, you know, hills and erosion and all those things. The farmer needs to decide, you know, what he's going to do.
Does ecology take into consideration potential erosion?
You know, his actually wasn't on, his study wasn't about erosion. It was about, you know, the like nitrogen and aluminum and all those different things that are in the soil, you know, how much we actually take away from the soil by burning or by baling.
Okay. So when you talk about a decline in the acreage that is being burned, what are we talking about? From what to what?
Around 2012, when we had the new fee structure, and we went from not just acres burned, but acres in piles. So we did tonnage and acreages. We set our fees, us completing between 160 and 140. I said that backwards. 140,000 acres to 160,000 acres was the average as we set our fees.
Is that for wheat specifically, or is that for other crops as well?
Well, it would include all crops burned acres-wise. Orchards, vineyards, everything that's burned in piles, we went to tons. At that time, in 2012, we were averaging between 15,000 and 20,000 tons a year. Now we are averaging about 55,000 tons a year on the pile burning. The acreage for like wheat stubble, or, you know, you get out there in the basin and they're burning wheat on the circles, irrigated, all that. So that's all combined on the acreage. You know, we're down to about 115,000 acres the last couple years, which is, you know, that's a pretty big reduction between 140 and 160,000 down to 115. But, you know, it's really been the last few years, about 7 or 8 years, that we've really been inundated with the wildfire smoke. The other thing is that the baling, like we talked about, all those things have cut back on the acreages pretty substantially.
Weren't we burning upwards of 250,000 acres at one time?
We were. Yeah, we were. So it's a lot less. And you know, I think the one thing about farmers is, man, they can adapt to just about anything. You know, it's the old baling wire, duct tape, and WD. They could probably drive their tractor across the country. As things have changed in the last few years, they've changed too. You know, I think they've also had to, you know, put in different rotations too. I know in the basin especially.
So what is the cost to burn acreage now?
Yeah, the cost is on acres, $37.50 is a minimum fee. So that's for 10 acres. And then $375 an acre. And then we went to $1 a ton on the pile burning and $80 minimum. So 80 tons is $80. 81 tons is $81. It just goes up like that.
And if I can recall what you said earlier, it sounds like the pile burning has increased a lot.
Yeah, it really has. What we did was, so we always did acres. But, you know, orchardists now, they can almost, you know, I guess you could call it a quick turnaround to where they used to have yellow and gold delicious and the trees were 25 years old, that kind of thing. Now it's 7 or 8 years and they might put in something new now. The other thing is that I don't know if the folks have been out in like orchard country. It's pretty interesting. There would be these orchards with these beautiful big trees in them. And, you know, the cherry orchards, the apple orchards. Now you go to a orchard, and not that anything's wrong with this, but it's like a trellis. It's like going to a vineyard, almost like a big giant vineyard. So the, you know, things have really changed in the orchard industry. We don't look at it as ecology's program. We kind of look at it as the farmer's agricultural burn program, and we administer it. So with the talk of fees and all that, there was a lot of talk with the guys who used the program and what was acceptable, what it cost us, how could we do this. So we really think of it as the farmers program, and we're the guys that are entrusted to run it for them.
And where do the burn permit monies flow?
Part of the change in fees also changed a little bit of the structure of where the monies go. A portion of it comes to ecology, a portion of it goes to our permitting authorities, and a portion of it goes into research. To be honest with you, ecology does get the largest portion, but we also are responsible for paying for air quality monitoring network, and we also pay for the weather models and those things we use every day that are developed by University of Washington and WSU.
So is the burning program self-sufficient on the burn permit fees?
As of right now, yes. You got to remember that we're not only doing agricultural burning. We do all the outdoor burning throughout eastern Washington that doesn't come under local airs, like Spokane Clean Air, Benton Clean Air, Yakima Clean Air. Everything else is done by ecology. So there's land clearing burning, there's special burning, there's residential burning. All those other things, too, are combined. So we do a little bit more than just the ag burn.
And all of those have fees associated?
No.
No?
No. Some of those don't have any fees at all. So the ag burn for us is the only burn program that has fees.
And so there's no money coming out of the state general fund into this program?
I would actually have to ask our fiscal officer, but as of right now, what we're trying to do is not use any general fund money at all.
Are you still making burn calls 365 days a year?
We do, every single day.
Is that really necessary?
The thing that happens is that the burning is really decided by the weather. If we're not burning and that we get a backlog of people wanting to complete their burning, the weekend, you know, could be a day that the weather's right for that. And so that really does help out the farmer. And, you know, the other thing we did is I think we said, because it's all weather dependent, that, you know, part of our agreements, verbal or written or just implied, is that we would make a burn decision 365 days a year.
When you came in 2001, that was about when a metering program came into.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And tell me about the metering. What is that?
What metering is, it's all about, to be honest with you, about not putting too much smoke into the air too fast. So what we learned is that by having different ignition times in different areas and kind of spreading out the burning, because if you've seen a burn decision, it'll say, you know, 11 to 4. So if we have 5,000 acres torched at 11, we could get ourselves in trouble. And we could also smoke out communities, smoke out people, all those things. So we figured out that we might be able to burn, and I'm just using the 5,000 acres as an example. We might be able to burn 5,000 acres without impacting people by, you know, burning 1,000 starting at 11 and then 12:30 or 1 o'clock, burn another 1,000 or 1,500. So it's all about spreading it out, both time and geographic location.
And have you gotten better at this over the
You know, it's funny you would say that, because I think the farmers appreciate it, because we actually do get to be a little bit safer on our burns instead of a mass ignition. It takes more work, without a doubt. You know, when we're looking at 15, 20,000 acres and everybody wants to burn, so there's a little bit of juggling, because we want to give everybody an opportunity. I think what we found out is, you know, the farmers are willing to say, hey, I'll go tomorrow. It's not good at my area. Then the next guy could say, hey, in my farm, it's looking good. Yeah, let's do it. And I guess the biggest thing, Scott, is to remember that why we're doing this, we're doing it to protect public health. And so, you know, we get farmers calling us up and go, you know, you might not want to burn at this location or around this town. Do you know there's a big football game, you know, tonight? Huh. Yeah, I mean, so they're into it. They want to be able to use it, do it properly, and we really do believe it's their program. So,
is this all being done by text now?
No, we do it by phone. It's what makes their program is that we have actually talked and developed professional relationships with a lot of people that are farmers throughout Eastern Washington. And you know, you develop the trust.
I want to circle back to the fee permits, and you mentioned that some of the money goes into research. So what is that permit money going to?
Yeah, so the research money is supposed to be for research that helps us reduce the amount of burning. This last biennium, remember we're on a two-year budget cycle, this last biennium is the first time that I can remember since starting in the program that we did not award any research money. Yeah, it's a little different. It's, you know, I think just like anything else, agricultural burning's not exactly, and this isn't a pun, but it's not exactly the hot topic it was 25 years ago or whatever. You know, now we're into wildfire and forest health and those kinds of things. It's still really important, of course, to me and the group I work with, and important with the farmers too, because they want to keep the ability or the tool to burn.
Has direct seeding had an impact on burning?
You know, I would say direct seeders have reduced burning. Direct seeders still use burning as a tool when they need to. But I think the advent of the new equipment over the last 10 or 15 years, their drills can seed through heavier residue and those kinds of things. But to me, I would just put all the equipment, all the new types of stuff that they got out there, that has helped reduce burning. And direct seeders want that residue on there. But like I said, we get direct seeders that burn, and that's the nice part or the best part about the program is that you don't have to burn. But when you do have to burn, it's available.
Back in the day, you know, one of the reasons for the whole burn program was because you had complaints. You had groups that were out here who were banging at your door to do something. Do we have complaints, and do we have groups out there, you know, like Safe Air for Everyone or Save Our Summers, that are still concerned about burning?
Yep. Yep. We still do. I'm happy to say, and I'm going to say this and probably should knock on wood, over the last few years, our complaints for agricultural burning are way down, and we've continued to work to reduce those complaints because we think we do a better job working with the farmer.
So when you're saying way down, they're in the single digits?
Yep. Over the last, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but right off the top of my head, on average, we usually get somewhere over 100 outdoor burn complaints. That's the neighbor smoking out the neighbor, or the guy, instead of taking the old trailer house to the dump, he burns it, okay? And we've been averaging about 5 complaints on ag burning.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And you know, we also have kept our relationships with the folks that, for us, it was SOS. And we've kept those relationships up because we still – I mean, I want to be able to say we are doing this right and to have people trust us that we are. And I think that's the portion with some of the air activists that we're serious about it. We're not going to allow people to burn and smoke people out. You know, you got the kid with the cystic fibrosis. You got the elderly. And everybody's in tune, and I think, I sure hope that folks trust us that you know, public health is at the top of importance, you know, on the list. So,
is there still a need for an ag burning task force? I certainly don't hear anybody shouting anymore over ag burning smoke. What does the ag task force fulfill now?
Yeah, you know, in the governance, the task force helps or sets the fees. So if there was going to be another fee change, it would go through the Ag Task Force. And that's in RCW. The task force is in RCW. It's not just administrative rule we came up with. So they set the fees. They also set our BMPs, and we do go over the BMPs each year. There's a lot of CRP that's going to be taken out over the next few years. It could literally be 20, 30,000 acres that want to get burned. And so we took that to the task force, and we came up with a BMP. You know, they said, hey, if you're going to burn it, then you don't get to plow it. Because if you're going to plow it under and, you know, go back and forth over it six or seven times, then you don't need to burn it. So in essence, that's what the BMP we came up with is, we'll allow you to burn it and then do a two-pass system. So that way, you know, that they can do some fertilizing and some other things, but they're not beating up the ground. So, yeah, so they still play. They play a vital role to make the entire program legitimate, because, like I said, I'm not a farmer, so I got to go to farmers and learn and find out the answer. And farmers are very, they like to talk about farming. You know, we have pretty cool farming in Washington, from dry land, you know, the guys from Walla Walla up to Pullman and into Whitman County. You know, some of those people got over 120 bushel an acre dry land wheat, which, not that I've done tons of research, but per bushel per acre or whatever, that's the greatest wheat growing place in the world.
I don't know if I attended the first Ag Burning Task Force meeting, but back in my reporting days, I attended a fair share. The meetings were a fascinating intersection of farmers, activists, and a government bureaucracy. For a reporter, it was invigorating for a while, but then it got ugly, before it got better again. Everybody listening to this now who was part of negotiating the Berne Agreement for Agriculture should stop and give themselves a pat on the back. And everybody who was an air activist listening should do the same. Ecology staffers of the era, it's your turn. As one of the few observers who watched the process unfold over a 25-year period, I think Ecology's burn program has worked out pretty well for all involved. Farmers are happy they continue to have the burning tool in their toolbox, and air activists and ecology staff are happy because smoke is not impacting people. For an issue that was on the point of the spear for so long, the fact that wheat stubble burning has become a backwater issue for farmers and air activists alike is a positive development. It should also be a point of pride for the Department of Ecology. Why? Because ag burning is a government program that works. I hope you've enjoyed episode 98, or what I've entitled, Ag Burning, a Program That Works, about my conversation with Kerry Peterson, supervisor of Ecology's Agriculture and Outdoor Burning Program for the Eastern Region. I hope you'll join me again next time for another episode of the Washington Grain Commission-sponsored Wheat All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead through a history of starvation and times of want and woe. Wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.